Hey, you're listening to The Creative Classroom. I'm John Spencer. I am a professor. I used to teach middle school. I love making things. I love design thinking. I love geeking out on all that kind of stuff. And this is basically a podcast that is essentially the same thing as my blog. You can find it at spencerauthor.com. So, here we go. What happens to kids when they don't know what to choose? What do you do in the classroom where you want to embrace student choice, but you're not sure where to go, and kids seem, well, reluctant. They seem to actually resist this idea of student choice. It seems counterintuitive. It seems completely unnatural to the way we typically learn. In life, we're often learning things because we choose to learn, because we want to learn, because we have this sense of agency and autonomy. And yet, when we try to incorporate these things into the classroom, we often run into challenges. We run into kids who don't necessarily know what they want to do. So what do you do about it? This is the second in a multi-part, month-long series on this concept of student choice. And here we go. When I first transitioned from using writing prompts to doing thematic blogs, I attempted kind of this middle ground. I offered a list of three writing ideas and a fourth that I described as a free choice. To my surprise, only a few students chose the free choice option. And when I say a few, I mean like out of 150 students, I had maybe four, right? Very few of them. Students seemed more engaged, but there was a cost to this. Several students began to say things like, "I just don't know what to write right now," or "I can't decide," or "Could you just tell me what I'm supposed to write?" And that's when I made a subtle shift. It was a minor tweak, but it made a huge difference. Every day became a free choice blog, and those writing prompts, well, they moved into an online collection that students could access anytime when they were looking for inspiration. It was a subtle shift from writing prompts to writing ideas. And writing prompts require writing, but writing ideas inspire writing. That's kind of the general idea. The key difference here was student agency. Instead of saying, "I'm giving you choices and I'll let you make up your mind on your own if these aren't good enough," I said, "Look, I trust you to write about what you want to write about. And if you're looking for more inspiration, check out this website I made." And then a month later, something even more surprising happened. I had students creating their own visual writing ideas and submitting them to me. They owned this process. An interesting thing happened. I never heard "just tell me what to write" from a student again. Roughly half of the students chose from the visual writing ideas I had created, but the other half chose kind of to write about whatever they felt like writing about. And that was the goal. We wanted it to feel as real to students as possible. And it worked. The greatest barrier to choice is fear. Look, we've all been there. You provide your class with choice and suddenly your students are resenting you for it. They tell you they prefer to have someone else make the decisions for them. Some students will beg for more directions. Others will sit there paralyzed by the sense that they don't know where to go and what to do. I've seen the same indecisiveness when students work on projects. When we first incorporated design thinking, I had students say things like, "Just tell me exactly what you want me to do." I responded with, "It's not my decision, it's yours. It's your project." Even now, in teaching at the university, I have had pre-service teachers say things like, "Can you tell me exactly what you want?" Choice can feel overwhelming. When a student says, "I don't know what to choose," it is often a code word for, "I'm afraid right now." A student might be afraid of being wrong, or of taking a creative risk, or of earning a low score. And all of these things become significant. They have this emotional cost. after years of focusing on the right way of doing things, right? We see it all the time in school. The right way to write your name on a paper, the right way to solve an equation, the right way to get in a line, the right way to behave on the playground. And it's so filled with right ways that it can feel jarring to hear just go your own way. Yes, I did just quote Fleetwood Mac unabashedly. Go your own way. Well, it's often a fear of doing things the wrong way that gets in the way of student choice. Students also experience this fear of missing out. For example, when I had students select books for silent reading, my most motivated students were often the least decisive. They weren't worried about grades or social pressures. They were worried about missing out on a great book. This idea is explored in The Paradox of Choice. I love this book. By the way, it's in the show notes. You can check it out. If you look at the blog itself, you'll see it there as well. There's a link to it. You can get it on Amazon. But Barry Schwartz describes this trend in a supermarket. Now, I want to say something about supermarkets that's significant. Supermarkets are not actually markets for superheroes. You don't have to be a superhero to shop in a supermarket. So just keep that in mind. Anyway, you walk down an aisle with so many types of mouthwash that it can feel overwhelming. You just want to get your mouth clean. But instead of being happy with your choice, you're left with this lingering sense that maybe you chose the wrong mouthwash. Schwartz warns of this maximizer mindset, where you constantly worry about making the best choice. As he puts it, if you seek and only accept the best, you are a maximizer. And this can feel very counterintuitive in our culture, to essentially say, it's okay to settle. It's okay to be okay with mediocre. That feels really, really bad. And it seems like lowering your standards. But actually, this is a key part to being happy with your choices. We're going to explore this whole idea of the paradox of choice and cognitive load in a future podcast. But for now, let's focus on this idea of fear. So after my last post, this guy, Peter Newberry, shared these concerns about student choice. And this is what he wrote on Twitter. What about students who don't yet know how to choose? I'd hate to leave them floundering. Some structure modeling is necessary, in my humble opinion. I think Peter is onto something here. A part of this is the sense of knowing how to choose wisely, and this is something that we'll explore later in a future podcast. But another part is this fear that often leaves students floundering. So what do we do about it? How can we change this up? Well, here are a few ideas. Number one, start with student interests. I used to start each school year with these things called geek out projects. Instead of doing traditional get to know you activities, students started with something they already geeked out about. Now, this was actually a strategic move on my part. I used to start with these history of me projects, and students would share their life story, their history, their family past, that kind of stuff. But I realized over time that that wasn't necessarily safe for students, especially at the beginning of the year. We had students who had faced trauma, students who had faced a lot of pain, and they didn't want to re-enter that and walk through that with a group of strangers and a teacher that they've never known. Don't get me wrong, it's important that we tap into who students are and that they feel that their stories are honored, but I can't help but wonder if maybe that needs to come later on in the year when there's already a deeper sense of trust. So for that reason, we did these geek out projects. And here's how it worked. They would find the thing that they already know a lot about, this thing that they geek out about. It could be fashion, it could be sports, it could be, you know, whatever. And then they would do research, writing, and multimedia composition in their themed blogs mentioned before. Here the choice felt natural because they already knew a ton about the subjects. These were topics where they were already the experts, so their confidence level was high. They were used to making decisions in those areas, right? Their agency was already at a high level, so they were willing to work at creating the work that connected to an area that they'd already been making these decisions. The net result was they were more confident in making decisions in their own learning. In other words, we started with something where they were truly already comfortable with. Number two, switch to standards-based grading. A little caveat here. If you can get away with not grading at all, if you can just give feedback and have self-reflection, that works even better. But in most schools, you have to have some kind of grade. This is just the system that we're under. We can't abolish it. We can't throw it out. We can't change it. We can't overthrow it. We can't do a revolution. We are working within this system. So imagining that you work within this system, what can you do when you have grades? Now, traditional grading pushes risk aversion because students are punished for learning things slowly, right? When you average your grades, students internalize the message that speed is more important than challenge. I saw this illustrated a while ago. I'm not sure where this illustration comes from, but there was an idea that, let's say you have someone packing a parachute and they're learning how to pack a parachute. Who would you rather have pack your parachute? The person that did it incorrectly for 5 times and then did it correctly for 25 times, or the person who does it correctly 4 times and then screws up the 5th time, 4 times correctly, screws up the 5th time? Who would you trust more? And the answer is, I would rather trust the person who knows it now, who's gone through that journey and continues to improve and has hit a place of mastery. That's the idea of mastery-based grading. That's the idea of a pattern of learning. That's the idea of standard-based grading. And it's important because it's really different than averaging out the grade. So for example, if a student screws up and there's, say, first 2 or 3 grades on a standard in a traditional classroom, they could forever be at a B or a C, even though they've mastered it later on. So that's the idea of standard-based grading. Now, what happens is when you average your grades, students internalize this message that speed is more important than the challenge. So when they're given the freedom to choose, they take a risk-averse approach out of the fear that they will make a costly mistake. Because again, you're telling them mistakes are not okay. And not only that, but they will often ask about compliance. They want to know, is this the right way to do things? And that gets in the way of choice. And this is because, again, if they can't redo it, then they want to make sure they have it right the first time. By contrast, a standard-based approach sends students the message that mistakes are okay. Go ahead and choose something challenging. Make your own decisions. And if it's wrong, you can always revise it. That's the beauty of a mastery mindset. You have the freedom to make mistakes because you have all the time in the world to reach mastery. Number three, embrace student ownership. Sometimes when students say, I don't know what to choose, what he or she really means is, I'm afraid you won't like it. This is why ownership needs to go beyond merely choosing from a bunch of options. It cuts to the core of why a student is doing the work and who they are creating it for. Students are more likely to fear choice when they feel that they are doing your assignment instead of their own. When they feel like it's for you and not for themselves, they're not going to choose. It's not going to feel real. And again, this is where that agency idea comes in. But when they feel this sense of control over the process, they are more likely to feel comfortable making these decisions. In the blogging example mentioned earlier, students felt as though they had to choose from one of my options, and they wanted to turn in something that I would like. It was directed by me. But when it shifted to a topical and thematic blog based upon their own geeky interest, they felt a sense of agency and autonomy instead. So instead of having writing prompts, they accessed these writing ideas, and it's a subtle distinction. Again, writing prompts are meant to require writing. Writing ideas are meant to inspire writing. And students are going to embrace choice much more when they are inspired to learn rather than required to learn. Instead of having an opt-in to the independent option, they began at a place of independent and only reached out for help when they felt uninspired, when they needed that extra boost. Number four, treat mistakes as a part of the learning process. We hinted at that a little bit before with the standard-based grading concept, but visit a skate park And you'll notice people making tons of mistakes. It's a part of the learning process. It's what makes skaters less risk-averse than most students. True, some skaters are indecisive. That happens. Some struggle with what to do and where to go, especially in the beginning. But choices aren't quite as scary because mistakes are allowed at the skate park. There's always a do-over button. I mean, if you visit a skate park, everyone is making mistakes. Everyone. And they're totally cool with it. It's how they learn at the skate park. I can't help but wonder if maybe schools need to be a little bit more like skate parks in this respect. It's become cliche to speak of failing forward and embracing failure, but sometimes there is a kernel of truth in something this cliche. When students see mistakes as a natural part of the process, student choice isn't quite so scary. A bad choice is simply a failed hypothesis. And it still sucks to make mistakes, and it isn't something that they enjoy. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to get angry. That still happens in a choice-driven classroom. But the difference is it's not soul-crushing. It doesn't feel permanent. This is why the revision phase is such a key part of design thinking. Students see mistakes as an exception. If you don't make mistakes, you weren't taking any creative risks. Number 5, provide structure for choice. Freedom can be scary. It can be too open, too chaotic, and too confusing. So it helps to use structures that allow for this freedom to thrive. It might mean modeling the decision-making process. It might mean using choice menus. However, it might also include designing units where choice is a necessary part of the learning. For example, in the PBL model, voice and choice are critical elements throughout the project. So that sense of choice is already built into it. It's an expectation. In the design thinking model, student choice drives everything from the awareness to the inquiry where they're asking their own questions to the research where they find their own route to the answers to the ideation where they brainstorm and develop a plan based upon their own minds and ultimately to the prototyping and revision where they're owning that entire process themselves and again to the audience where they get to decide the launch. But in both PBL and design thinking, there's a ton of structure. It's never this free-for-all, do whatever you want. And that's a critical element. This sense of structure actually provides more safety, and that safety makes it safe to take bigger creative risks. So choice becomes this natural part of what you're doing. This is one of the things I love about AJ Giuliani's approach to the Genius Hour in both learning by choice and inquiry and innovation in the classroom. Now, AJ is a good friend of mine. He and I co-wrote the book Launch together, and I highly recommend those two books. Go check them out, buy them, get them on Amazon. They're awesome. Anyway, he demonstrates how structure can actually foster student agency. And he incorporates voice and choice in the process. It sets the parameters where creativity can thrive. So it actually boosts the creative process. This in turn reduces fear and risk aversion. Students can then embrace choice as a vital part of the learning process without being worried that they are doing it wrong. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. You increase agency, you increase confidence, you increase empowerment, and students aren't quite so scared. And then in the process, they can make their own decisions and embrace this freedom that should be a cornerstone to what we do in the classroom on a regular basis. Now, there are still going to be times where kids resist choice. There are going to be times where they hit overload. There are going to be times when they get scared. That's a natural part of the process. But I do think that when we provide these things and we reduce the fear, that you then have what they call the affective filter going down. And students are less afraid and they're more bold and courageous and ready to make creative decisions. They're ready to own the learning process. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. Because when they own this learning process, they become the lifelong learners we want them to be.